Storylines Midwest is a project of the American Library Association, funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities and Barnes & Noble Booksellers.
The Mississippi River. She flows from Lake Itasca to the Gulf of Mexico through wilderness, farmland, small towns, and big cities.
For hundreds of years, she's been a center of commerce, a means of transportation, and a never-ending source of inspiration.
From Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe.
And I'm Keith Taylor. Today, the Mississippi River and the book that helps keep her legend alive, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
We'll meet fans of the book and two kids who recreated Huck and Jim's journey on their own homemade raft. We'll take your calls as well at 866-255-2762.
It's Storylines Midwest. The Mississippi is certainly one of the world's great rivers, and it's certainly the main artery of the Midwest. But it's become an icon, more a symbol than a river, to many people for one reason, and that's the book, Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn.
Each year, tourists flock to Twain's boyhood home in Hannibal, Missouri. You can hardly see the Mississippi now from the town because of the levees, but Hannibal still looks like the riverfront town it was when Samuel Clemens was a boy.
Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn fans go to Hannibal to see the Mark Twain Museum, Twain's home, and to see the sites written about in the books. Because even after more than a century, readers of all ages continue to read and enjoy Twain's story about Huck, Jim, Tom, and the mighty Mississippi.
And I think we like them because they're witty, but they're also sign of the times.
I appreciate the echoes of a past time coming through now, and I think as we listen to those echoes of former times, we have a better sense of who we are now, how we got here, where we came from, and who we are now.
Well, I think that they're really kind of adventurous, so you can find out what happens to, like, if you wanted to do an adventure, you could just take it from a book.
And two fans of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn have done just that. Later on the program, we'll meet two college students who retraced Huck and Jim's journey on their own homemade raft.
While I've been thinking about this book, Charity, it's occurred to me that people all over the United States, and maybe even people all over the world, if they don't care about books, if they never read American literature, they have two images of our books. The first one is that crazy guy chasing that big white whale. And the second one is the poor white boy and the black man escaping from slavery, floating down the river together on a hot summer night. Beautiful image. Everybody has it. Here's one of the scenes, the real scenes that created that image.
We catched fish and talked. And we took a swim now and then to keep off sleepiness. It was kind of solemn, drifting down the big, still river. Laying on our backs, looking up at the stars, and we didn't ever feel like talking loud. It weren't often that we laughed, only a little kind of a low chuckle. We had mighty good weather as a general thing, and nothing ever happened to us at all, that night, nor the next, nor the next. Every night we passed towns. Some of them way up on black hillsides, nothing but just a shiny bed of lights. Not a house, could you see? The fifth night, we passed St. Louis, and it was like the whole world lit up. In St. Petersburg, they used to say there was 20 or 30,000 people in St. Louis, but I never believed it till I see that wonderful spread of lights at 2 o'clock. That still night, there weren't a sound there. Everybody was asleep.
That's an excerpt from Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. This is Storylines Midwest. I'm Keith Taylor.
And I'm Charity Nebbe. With us in the studio today is David Anderson. He's the founder of the Society for the Study of Midwestern Literature. He's also the senior editor of the Dictionary of Midwestern Literature. And most importantly, to us at least, he's also an ardent fan of Huck Finn. He taught the book for many years as a professor at Michigan State University, and I'm told he rereads the book at least once a year. And whether you're a fan or a critic of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, we'd love to hear your comments and your questions today. The number to call to join our conversation is 866-255-2762. That's 866-255-2762. David Anderson, thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks for being here, Dave. So you've lived with this book a long time. It's been part of your life.
I even built a raft of my own once.
Did you really?
I grew up on the Black River in Ohio, and my brother and two other guys and I built a raft. I think it was the summer of 1938. We got it, launched it into the river, and it lasted about 20 minutes before a tugboat went past and swamped it.
Had you already read Huck Finn by that time?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the first time you read that book?
I think I was about 10.
Were you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was it about the book then that really captured you, do you think?
Well, at 10, I envied Huck. even at that unfortunate end where he has to choose between civilization and escape, and there's just the sense that he can't escape. And that frightened me even at 10. But it's still a great book. It's a controversial book. It has been from its publication in 1885. The Concord Public Library, the arch temple of New England writing, condemned it roundly as being simply unfit to read. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's still controversial. There are those who insist that there are racist elements in it.
I'm sure when you taught that, your students confronted you with that question. How did you answer it?
There's only one. It's a realistic book. Mark Twain is attempting to recreate, and he comments on this in one of the first pages, attempting to recreate the language that he knew growing up in the Mississippi, the language that people spoke. And there were certain words that we use now that are proved that just didn't exist in his day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nobody had ever heard the word African-American. It just wasn't used. There was only one word Huck knew, and he used it, just as many of the rest of us do the same thing today. If we don't know the word, we don't use it. But this is a dimension of Huck Finn that has remained. It's been controversial from the very beginning. And maybe that's one of the tests of its greatness.
Now, you taught the book for many years. Mm-hmm. What kind of responses did you get from your students on that issue?
Really, not very much. They tended to accept it. I don't think I had a single student who took strong exception to it. Now, at the book centennial in 1985, there was a symposium of African American scholars who were discussing the book, and every one of them said that the book made them at best uncomfortable. And I can see this. I can see anybody reading the book today, and given the atmosphere with which we regard race relations, they're going to feel uncomfortable. I feel uncomfortable at times.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
But I know what Twain is doing, and I know Huckleberry Finn. I know the words that he would use. I know his background, and there's nothing to do but accept it.
What is it for you that brings you back to the book over and over again?
I like it. That's the best way I can put it. But it's interesting. And there are sections of this book that I think are unbelievably good. They're funny. They're thought-provoking. One of those sections, for example, that I've always liked is the section on the King and the Duke. Uh-huh. Now, these are both, well, The King particularly, was based on a mythological Midwestern character. You know, when the French Revolution came into existence, the Dauphin, the heir to the throne, disappeared. And there were rumors that he had been brought to North America, to French Canada, and then had grown up on the frontier and drifted down through the Ohio River Valley and the Mississippi. Louis Bromfield deals with the same theme in one of his novels. But the Dauphin is the king, and he's just a completely satirical creation on Twain's part. And then, of course, the Duke, who's a typical, well, they're both typical frontier conmen.
Right. And confidence man.
Confidence man.
Confidence and took you for a ride.
And that whole section when they put on their stage production, the Royal Nonsuch, is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at the end of that section, Huck and Jim come back to Earth and the raft and go on. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things, again, that I like about it. It really moves through a cross-section of frontier American life. It goes from town to country to con men to... and, of course, Huck and Jim are really aliens in this world. Because Huck is an outcast and Jim is a runaway slave. And, of course, they're attempting to maintain their independence. And, of course, something in the background of this has always impressed me. And this is that they're ostensibly free as long as they're on the raft.
Yeah.
And yet they're going deeper and deeper into slave territory. So how's it going to end? And I've always thought the end was a little anticlimax.
Yeah, the ending of the book has taken a fair amount of grief over the years, hasn't it? Those last 12 chapters or so. Yeah.
But, you know, the experience that Mark Twain had in writing it, I think it's probably I'm sure it's the hardest book that he wrote because he took a number of breaks in the writing for periods of months, and I suspect that he really didn't know where it was going, except that it was going down the Mississippi.
Right. You're listening to Storylines Midwest. I'm Charity Nebbe here with Keith Taylor, and if you'd like to join our conversation today, you can do so at 866-255-2762. That number again is 866-255-2762. Our guest today is David Anderson, who taught the book Huckleberry Finn for many, many years at Michigan State University. And we have a caller on the line, Earl from Kalamazoo. Hello, Earl.
Hi, everyone.
How are you?
Congratulations on your new show, by the way.
Thank you.
It coincidentally to me, in conversation this week, the subject of censorship came up in relation to President Bush chastising members of Congress. And I was correcting someone saying, no, that's secrecy, different than censorship. But it struck me that in the subject of censorship, Huck Finn had been listed as among the most censored books in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Was my memory correct?
I think you're right. I was just remembering something. The first publication of the book was in Scribner's Magazine. And an example of censorship, the section that I was talking about, the King and the Duke doing the Royal Nonsuch, well, the King and the Duke prance out onto the stage naked. But Scribner's cut out the word naked. This was a taboo word in a family magazine in the 19th century.
So we just had to guess.
Yeah.
So all those reasons for controversy over the years, I mean, the reasons for censorship, they've changed. I mean, there's one thing bothered people in 1885 and another one bothered them in 1995, and it's a different thing.
Well, there are still people who object to it because Huck smokes.
Oh, yeah.
And people don't want their children imitating Huck in that respect. Mm-hmm.
Has your reading changed at all since you first started teaching?
Oh, yes.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's happened?
Well, I see more in it. I see subtleties that perhaps even Twain didn't know were in it when he wrote the book. And, of course, I read it in the context of changing society.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that were objectionable 30 years ago are no longer objectionable. Things that were not objectionable then are very much objectionable now. But it has been banned, I think, by more school systems than any other book in the country. And I think largely for that reason, that people continue to find objectionable features in it that change from taste to taste.
Well, think about you as a 10-year-old boy reading it, and now reading it now. What about the book appeals to you now that maybe didn't then?
Well, I think I know more about the context, for one thing. And I have developed an abiding interest in the history, the culture of the Midwest. And then, too, I like to think that I see myself in Huck Finn even yet.
What makes this an important work of literature?
Well, it is certainly the single most influential book on American literature, Midwestern literature, Western literature, Southern literature, in the whole history of American writing. It developed a new literary language, which is, of course, the spoken language.
Yeah.
This is why Huck used terms that were not acceptable in his day and are not acceptable in ours. He used the language he knew. And, of course, what Twain does is, this is one reason, I think, incidentally, why Huck Finn was never very popular in New England, because New England saw itself as the arbiter of American language and American literature. And here's this upstart Westerner is trying to recreate it. And, of course, in the process, finding a great deal of admiration, a great deal of respect, and a tremendous amount of influence. Another dimension I think is very important is that Twain introduces a new character type. He doesn't call it anything, but Sherwood Anderson, who was strongly influenced by Mark Twain, calls it grotesques.
Yeah.
Most of Twain's people are grotesques. All you have to do is think of Miss Watson, think of the Grangerfords, think of the King and the Duke. Mm-hmm. They're all grotesque characters.
And by that we mean they're not normal.
They're not
turned
normal.
Somehow.
Right.
The
Absolutely.
Grotesque.
Mm-hmm. They've been distorted in some way or other.
Yeah.
And, of course, Anderson picked this up. Winesburg, Ohio is really he subtitled it The Book of the Grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this was very strongly influential in Hemingway, very strongly influential on Faulkner. And
Flannery O'Connor comes
Flannery
to mind.
Flannery O'Connor was very strongly influenced by it. Yeah. And so a new language, a new character type, and a dimension that I think is most important to Midwestern writing is that we do tend to think of writing of literature as literature of place.
Yeah.
But Huckleberry Finn is literature. Yeah. The only place is moving, and this, of course, is the river. And it's not exactly a quest, although ostensibly Huck and Jim are searching for freedom. They know they're not going to find it. They're going the wrong place, the wrong direction. They missed their chance to go up the Ohio.
And they know this, too.
And they know it. So the only choice they have is to go on until they run into circumstances whereby they can't go on. And this movement, I think, becomes very important in Midwestern literature particularly, because Midwesterners, as a rule, don't stay home. Mm-hmm. They go to California, they go to New York, they go to, in Sherwood Anderson's day, they all went to Chicago.
Can we make that like one of our sort of little defining points of Midwestern literature? Is that
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think it's most important. Yeah. It's not, take Willa Cather, for example. All of her people have come to Nebraska from someplace else. Uh-huh. They're looking for something. They may or may not find it. Anderson's people, Dreiser's people, they all go to the city. That's where the action is. That might not be the kind of action that they're searching for, but that's where it is.
If you'd like to join our conversation today, the number to call is 866-255-2762. 866-255-2762 is the number to call. And Robert is on the line from Frankfort, Michigan. Hello, Robert.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, my English teacher taught us that Huckleberry Finn as a character was really meant to be a parody on an ignorant redneck racist. And I wondered if you agreed with that.
Absolutely not.
No?
he's a pretty clear-cut depiction of the kind of kid that Clemens was and that his other fictional characters were. Uh-huh. He's a little more sophisticated than Tom Sawyer. That shows up very nicely in the novel when Tom comes south to visit his relatives who think that Huck is Tom, and so Tom becomes Huck. No, Tom becomes Tom's brother, Sid.
Right.
But, no, it's not a satire.
But his descriptions of Jim are so pejorative to the extreme as it would suggest that they would be a parody.
Well, except that they weren't in Mark Twain's time, you know. Uh-huh. We were talking about that a while ago, and that is that Huck is a product of his environment, which is a pretty lousy environment, you must admit, with his father, Pap Finn, the major influence on him. Mm-hmm. And consequently, now Pap Finn is very clearly depicted as a nasty racist.
Yeah.
But Huck is in the process of learning. And there are some wonderful moments when he does realize that what he had learned all his life is simply not true. And
some wonderful juxtapositions between what he thinks he knows is right and what he feels in his gut.
Yeah, right. Or what he has to pretend and what he feels.
Right. Robert, thank you so much for your call. If you'd like to join our conversation, call us at 866-255-2762. David, you talked about how this is a book that spawned a certain kind of literature and a certain kind of character. What makes it still an important book in and of itself?
Well, I think it's just a great piece of work. You know, if I can read a book over and over and teach it over and over and not get bored with it, not get tired of it, and I've never had that experience with Huckleberry Finn. I have with other books, including some major works. I just enjoy it.
I think that's a good enough reason.
Yeah, it speaks to me.
Yeah.
David Anderson is our guest today. He is the founder of the Society for the Study of Midwestern Literature and senior editor of the Dictionary of Midwestern Literature. This is Storylines Midwest. 866-255-2762 is the number to call to join our conversation today. And Mary is on the line now in Iowa City. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Hello, I'm really enjoying the show.
Great.
And I see you talking about Huck Finn, and American literature in general is vernacular, and somehow we as Americans think that this vernacular idiom will foil us. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we look to Europe, like we had a translation workshop here, and a European person from Bosnia, he could agree that there was value in American literature, but the person who taught here didn't say anything. So I don't. I'm a black woman, and I don't find Huck Finn offensive. I never found it offensive.
Good.
I found out it's just a mirror, and this is what happened. How can you deny your past?
Yeah, David, I think that there's a lot of Americans who have not even yet accepted that whole vernacular impulse in Huck Finn.
Well, I think that's true, but at the same time, you can see that the vernacular is changing in fiction. For example, there were words that Hemingway did not dare use that you will read in almost any novel you pick up today.
Yeah.
And they're not the kinds of words that we would use on the air. But still in all, the vernacular is changing. And some of the changes I begin to find offensive, which shows my folkiness.
Mary, thank you so much for your call and such an interesting point. We also have Alex on the line in Waterford, Michigan. Hello, Alex. Oops, looks like we lost Alex.
So, David, do you think that when we look around the influence of American literature in the world, has that vernacular that Twain was the first major figure to use, has that been the big influence?
Well, Twain was the first one, about the same time that he was writing in the 70s and 80s, there were a few other writers who were attempting to use native scenes and native languages and whatnot. But Twain, of course, was the major success in that he made his reputation very early. By 1870, he was a major American humorist. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there are still those who insist that he is primarily a humorist. They don't ignore the undertone of bitterness that you find in some of the scenes in Huckleberry Finn. And, of course, that went on to dominate most of his writing in later years. But
he became quite a bitter man, didn't he, by the end?
Yeah. There seemed to be an accumulation of bitterness in America about the end of the 19th century. I'm thinking, too, of Ambrose Bierce, very much a man in the Twain tradition, and very, very bitter in his old age. And I'm not sure why, unless it was the changing nature of the country. It was becoming an industrial country. And I think a lot of them simply didn't like it. But Ambrose Bierce was even known as Bitter Bierce in his old age.
So, David, you reread this book every year. What time of year do you do that?
Usually around Christmas time.
So you're coming up on your annual trip down the Mississippi River.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, David.
Thank you, Dave.
It's been my pleasure.
David Anderson has taught Huck Finn for many years as a professor at Michigan State University. He's also the founder of the Society for the Study of Midwestern Literature. This is Storylines Midwest. For more information on Storylines Midwest or the books we're reading, you can visit our website at storylines.ala.org, or you can check out your local public library. Participating libraries have copies of the books, they have program schedules, and they even have discussion guides if you want to start your own Storylines book club. You're listening to Storylines Midwest.